Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Conservative Voice here on WWDB 860 AM. I'm Don Beichel Jr., and my co-host, Mr. James Jones, is coming in hot. But in fact, here comes Mr. Jones walking in the door now, so we got to give him some time to get himself situated here. But he's here, and that's the most important thing. So we got some good show lined up today. First, we're going to have great candidate for coroner in Montgomery County, Anna Marie Scannapico. And then Aaron Beshear will be on. He's running for controller in the city of Philadelphia. And in the 1 o'clock hour, we're going to have State Representative Tom Jones coming on. He's going to be talking about the upcoming election in Lancaster County, which is an important area for us to know. Because we know, quite honestly, that this cancer of liberal progressiveness is spreading. It started in Philadelphia and slowly made its way out into Montgomery County, Bucks County, Chester County, and Delaware County. And now it's infiltrating Lehigh and Lancaster and Northampton. And so, consequently, we have to take steps to stop it. And what I mean by that is we can no longer allow Democrats to run unopposed, whether it be in the city of Philadelphia or any other office. And for far too long, the Republican Party has done that. They've just basically given up on segments of the electorate, and they no longer, James and I have talked about this many times on the air, that in the city of Philadelphia, for example, they know there's some races that they just don't even put it. They don't even put a candidate up. I mean, there are certain council races in the city of Philadelphia where they have never had a Republican challenger in 20 or 30 years. It's disgusting to me that we've given up. But this is what happens, and then you end up having candidates that are no longer have Republican values and principles. It's just ridiculous. So anyway, not that I want to take up too much time on my part of that, but it's just these are the things that are going on. So I want to bring on somebody that the last time she ran, people seem to forget this, that Anna Marie got more votes than any other Republican candidates in Montgomery County when she ran, and therefore she is a formidable force, but she brings a lot more to the table. And one of the things we brought up the last time she ran was her qualifications versus the qualifications of her opponent. And we have that again. So I want to welcome her to the show. Anna Marie, thanks for coming on.
Hey, thank you for having me, Don. Good to speak with you.
It's great. I'm sorry I missed you last time. I was having major car issues, but
I'm so sorry. I heard that and felt so bad for you.
Yes. But thankfully, James and Gary were able to bring you through. So Tuesday's the big day.
Yes, I'm excited.
Well, you should be, because quite honestly, if I was reading on your Facebook page, and I thought this was great. You said if we were just going into a regular corporation for a job, and you put my resume up against my opponent's resume, my qualifications would win me the job hands down.
And it's true.
Yeah. So let's get into that a little bit. So, let's talk about your qualifications and what you bring to the table versus what your opponent has.
Well, if you might remember from 4 years ago when I ran, I have a plethora of degrees and actually went out and got another one. But for the most part, my main educational qualifications is that I have a master's degree in forensic medicine. I am a forensic nurse, and I recently achieved a doctorate in grief counseling. So all of that, makes me qualified as far as education. In addition, I also worked at the coroner's office for 2 years, so I know how it works, and I've been involved in the day-to-day operations of the coroner's office. Compare that to my opponent this time, which coincidentally is not the same candidate I ran against the last time, but this time I'm running against a family medicine practitioner who specializes in obesity.
So let me ask you a question.
No forensic background experience.
Let me ask you a question, Anna Marie.
Mm-hmm.
How many dead people have to lose weight?
I'm sorry, you faded out.
How many dead people have to lose weight? So, it's just a question that I'm trying to bring.
No, I know. Yeah. Sadly, I didn't hear you because it faded out a second time. I'm sorry.
I don't know
if it's my phone or the connection or something. But, you know, the bottom line is that people who run for office on either side of the aisle should have the education, the job experience, the qualifications for that job that they're running for. And the electorate needs to educate themselves and do their own research instead of concern themselves with a letter inside the parentheses. So things might run a lot better if people just did that instead of just, you know, I'm a Dem, I'm going to vote D's, I'm R, I'm going to vote R. And, you know, it's a shame because, like my post said, if we just went on a job interview, I would get it hands down without question.
So let me ask you this question. So, or maybe get an explanation, because when a lot of people think of the office of the coroner, right away they think of the TV shows like Quincy and Bones and all that stuff like that.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's not what it is. But why don't you explain to people exactly what it is that the coroner's office does and how?
A lot of people do think it's like it is on TV. And with working there for 2 years, I can assure you it is not. The coroner does not do autopsies unless they're a forensic pathologist, which I am not. Obviously, neither is my opponent. But the forensic pathologists do the actual autopsies. The investigators, which I was for 2 years, they go out and do all the investigating. And at the end, the coroner oversees the entire office, oversees the final death certificate to make sure that everything matches up, that what the pathologist says is what matches up to what the investigators, you know, found at the scene. And then ultimately the coroner puts their name on that legal document, and, you know, which is obviously very important for a number of reasons.
So if you make a determination that a death was a homicide or versus a, you know, accident or something like that, that would give the police the emphasis to investigate or something like that.
You faded out a little bit, but you said an accident, a car crash?
Yeah. So I don't know why I'm fading out, but anyway, my question was that, as you said, when you make a determination whether it's an accident or a homicide or something like that, that would give the police the emphasis whether they had to investigate or not. Is that what that boils down to?
Well, any type of accident, whether it's a drug overdose, a car crash, you know, a occupational accident where, you know, sadly someone dies, homicide, suicide, they all need to be investigated. The coroner's office gets called out under any type of, you know, situation like that. So the police do their investigation, the coroner's office, the investigators do their investigation. It's like pieces of a puzzle. And for that death certificate to be finally certified by the coroner, all the pieces of the puzzle have to fit together, you know, without any shred of doubt.
So one of the things that you said that you've added to your resume is the grief counseling thing. How does that tie into the coroner's office as far as, you know, being able to deal with families and things of that nature?
Well, I have to tell you, when I worked there, now it's been a couple of years now, but when I worked there, there was no type of support for the families outside of, you know, this is what happened, this is what we're going to do, we're going to take your loved one, we're going to do an autopsy. But there was really no consoling or, you know, counseling of any sort to help the families deal with their grief. Sometimes it was shock, you know, they didn't know, you know, we're just there for the body. And I want to kind of change that now, that we also will be a source of comfort for their grief, as well as direction of what to do now. A lot of people know what to do once their loved one dies. And then all of a sudden, you know, they're hit with a wave of guilt or grief that they don't know how to handle. So by getting that doctorate in grief counseling, you know, I think in addition to helping them through the whole process, I can add additional benefit of trying to help them deal with their grief.
Now, obviously, you're an ER nurse. Is that correct right now?
I'm sorry, you faded out.
You're an ER nurse right now?
Yes, I'm still an ER nurse,
mm-hmm.
Still a forensic nurse. I've just been, you know, working in the ER. I did a little travel nursing over the pandemic and stuff. But, yep, I'm still an ER nurse.
So being an ER nurse, you've seen all sorts of, because my daughter is also an ER nurse. So you've seen a ton of many, let's say, different things come through.
In the ER, yes. And for 2 years when I worked at the coroner's office, the things that I saw in Montgomery County in 2 years would make your hair stand on end. You don't realize how active the county is, sadly, with deaths until you actually work in the office and are exposed to it on a regular basis. But yes, in the ER too as well.
Anna-Marie, this is James. I got a question for you. I know you was with us about a week or so ago. On the 20th of October, and one of the things we did get through ad nauseum was, you know, not only a lot about your background, but I'd like to know, what is the difference between a regular ER nurse and a forensic nurse, and how would that skill transfer over into the pathology, or I should say, into the coroner's?
Well, an ER nurse, you know, deals with the acute things that come in, whether it's abdominal pain, strokes, heart attacks, things like that. There's not really a forensic element to an ER nurse. What a forensic nurse does, and I did work for 5 years at the Philadelphia Sexual Assault Response Center that works with the Philadelphia Special Victims Unit, collecting, reviewing rape victims. So that's what a forensic nurse does. So when you go for your forensic training, you not only learn how to do forensic rape kits, but you also learn about other aspects of forensics. My main training was my master's degree in forensic medicine.
So as a forensic nurse, they basically, part of your training, they would teach you how to put together or keep intact chain of custody and that kind of stuff, correct?
Absolutely. That's so key. You know, obviously if something, you know, like a homicide or something, that evidence needs to be preserved, or even in a rape case, of course, evidence has to be collected a certain way. The person has to be interviewed a certain way, handled a certain way, and, you know, the chain of custody must be maintained.
Anna-Marie, what separates you? I mean, specifically, I heard you say some things earlier about, you know, the other opponent has some skill sets in my obesity, but what separates you politically or with your philosophicals or principally from your opponent?
Well, the great thing about the coroner is that we serve everyone in the community. We don't care about your political affiliation. You know, I'm the Republican, she's the Democrat, but in the end, it doesn't really matter because we're there for the whole community. We don't get a call and say, hey, by the way, who did they vote for? So that's the great thing. You know, that's the great thing about the coroner's office. We truly are there for everyone in the community.
It's probably one of the few offices that I guess would be truly bipartisan, because it doesn't really matter what your registration is. If you pass away, you pass away.
Right.
Exactly. And that's the shame of it, that it's an elected position, because, you know, if she does win, then you have a family medicine doctor versus, you know, all of my qualifications in forensics and things like that. And that's the shame of it.
So switching gears just a tiny bit from the qualifications in the office, what are you finding? I mean, I know you're a door knocking beast. So I understand I know that from 4 years ago, and I know that's what you're doing now. But what are you finding when you're talking to people about not only the election coming up in general, what the feeling is, but your specific election, when you're talking to people, how do you, you know, broach the subject? Say you're knocking on the door of somebody, you know, that might be an independent or a Democrat, you know, but, you know, you want to get your message to them. What kind of feedback are you getting? What are you finding out?
Well, you are right. I am a door knocking beast. I believe it or not, even though I'm 4 years older, I've probably done four times the amount. I did like close to 20,000 homes this time around. And a lot of it's lit dropping. But when I do see people outside, a lot of it is, first of all, they ask me what part I am. And then sometimes I kind of like cringe a little bit because I'm like, oh boy, they're going to hate me because I'm the Republican. But once I tell them I'm the Republican, they're like, oh, good. And then they'll ask me my qualifications and what have you. And basically, they want something new. They want something different. They're tired of the same old, same old. They're tired of the lip service. And I'm like, well, hey, give a Republican a chance. You know, I put a post up to my Democrat friends, start your New Year's resolution early and vote Republican. And I think a lot of them are going to this time. I think they're going to research the candidates a little bit more. And I think that they might just be so fed up with the way of the country, the way of the county, the way of the state. And they're just saying, you know what, let's give the other side a chance and see what happens. And I'm keeping my fingers crossed that, number one, they do that. And number two, that the Republicans show up, because that's another reason why I think we lose, is that the R's don't show up. I don't know if they're just trying to wave the white flag, or I don't know. They're disenfranchised, but that's what we're hoping for. That's what we've all been working for, to get out the vote on Tuesday, and the Republicans must come out.
Anna Maria, another question for you. And I know you've been beating the doors and knocking paint and chips off, but who are some of the endorsements that have said, hey, I stand behind Anna Maria, because, you know, she's...
You know what? I did not seek the endorsements like I did the last time. I just went directly to the people. And much like last time, I reached out to everybody, the Dems, the Republicans, the Independents, because, again, who cares when it comes to the coroner? We're there for everybody. So I didn't seek the endorsement of anybody, any organization. I sought the endorsement of the people. They're the ones going to be showing up on Tuesday, and their mail-in ballots. And I've gotten, you know, I've received some private messages on Facebook from my Dem friends that have said, hey, we voted for you. So I hope that's a trend come Tuesday.
Well, and again, I think it's – I don't want this to be like a secondary thought, but in the last election, when you ran 4 years ago, you actually received more votes than any other Republican candidate. So I think it's important for people to know that you have made it a habit of reaching across the aisle for this particular office, because you're absolutely right. You know, many offices, there's a stark difference – of what services that are provided, you know, or what your focus is if you're a Democrat or a Republican. But coroner, you know, you're trying to treat everybody equally, and really this, A, you give answers to the families, but B, you're able to console the families and let them know, you know, that, you know, their loved one is being looked at after, even in death.
Yeah, I think it's important bring that aspect to the office, because like I said, when I worked there, that part of it was lacking. And, you know, it's a very scary time for people, and they need direction and they need comfort. And I think that, you know, bringing that to the office, not just by me, but by, you know, the people who work there, you know, that's one way of making the office better. I haven't been there in a couple of years, so I have to wait till January to get in there and see what else needs fixing. But I know that the grief counseling part of it, you know, would be huge.
Now, what as a coroner, so one of the things I'm sure you would have to deal with is drug deaths, drug overdoses. And one of the things we talk about is this influx of fentanyl coming into the country. And so from a forensic standpoint, when you determine a drug death, are you able to get down to the fact if it was fentanyl caused, or, you know, because again, knowing these facts can help law enforcement know where they have to target their resources.
Yeah, they can send out the specimens for toxicology, and they do break it down to, you know, whether it's a cocaine overdose, a fentanyl overdose, some type of opioid heroin overdose. So what I found in some of my research, I think, I forget what year it was, 21 or 22, where there was 210 drug overdoses in the county. And you think to yourself, well, that doesn't sound like that many. Well, it's not that many until it's your kid or your relative.
Right. That's the truth. Until it comes down to you, it's not, you know, you could say 210 is not a lot, but you know, again, each death, whether it's a child or a relative, you know, strikes home to people. And we lost her. She's in the hospital. She is working today. She's in the hospital. So whether an emergency came in or what. Oh, she's coming back. Here we go. Anne-Marie, you're back? Yep.
I'm sorry. Yeah, there's all kinds of activity. I'm working today at the ER, and there's all kinds of activity.
Yeah, I was just telling the listeners that you're in the hospital, so, you know, sometimes reception is shady there as well. But
it's my lunch break. Yeah. But, yeah, so I don't know if you heard it, you know, 210, and, you know, it doesn't sound like a lot in Montgomery County for, you know, a county this size of 900,000 people, but until it's your relative, your loved one, your son, your daughter, then it's a lot, you know. So, of course, 4 years ago when I ran, I wanted to get into the community and try and educate these young kids to stay away from this garbage. And I would continue. I would do that, you know, if I was elected again. There's a lot of different things I want to do. Suicide's a big one, too. You know, 110 people died of suicide. And, again, doesn't sound like a lot, but it is a lot. We don't even want anybody to take their own life.
So
I got a lot of big plans.
So one of the things that, from what I take from what you just said, so community outreach as far as this situation, whether it would be drugs or suicide, would be one of the goals of your office.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Because nobody wants, you know, I know this sounds harsh, but nobody wants a dead kid.
Right.
And, you know, honestly, though, with working in the ER, I see a lot of older people, too. You think, well, they should know better, you know, by the time they're in the 50s and 60s. But you'd be surprised at the number of overdoses that come in. They're the lucky ones because they're still alive. They were given Narcan or something that brought them back. So it goes from, you know, young to old, this drug epidemic. And I would like to do our part. You know, that's not the kind of business that the coroner's office wants.
So one of the other aspects that is out there, and we've talked about it before on the show, is this, what I call this pandemic or pandemic of depression that's going through our society. And obviously, you know, a lot of the focus is now is on young kids and school pressure and stuff like that. But we also have a veterans population that suffers from PTSD and so forth and so on. And sometimes I think that gets overlooked, and unfortunately they end up in the coroner's office because of, like you said, suicide or something like that. So because of your educational background, I'm sure you've studied a lot of this. What are your thoughts on that, and how could you tailor the coroner's office through community outreach to maybe address that situation?
Well, I know the county already has, you know, offices that deal with, you know, drug and alcohol use, and there are resources out there, but the coroner's office is not involved typically.
Mm-hmm.
So my goal would be to get involved with these other county agencies and say, hey, what can we do? Because we want to help too, whether it is for depression and suicidal ideation or drugs and alcohol. Like I said, there are already some programs in Montgomery County, but I want to get our office involved to see how we can help. What can we do? Because we don't want you at our office. We want you to stick around for as long as you possibly can on this great earth.
Anna-Maria, and that certainly sounds like a business person. My question now is, what kind of budget does the coroner's office currently have, and what would be your 3 to 5 year business plan for the coroner's office if you were elected as the next candidate? What would you want to do? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I mean, if those are the top 5 things, if you had the right budget that you could accomplish that, what would it look like?
Well, honestly, I don't have the answer to that specifically right now. I haven't worked there in 7 or 8 years, and I don't know what the current coroner has done. He's been in there for 8 years now, so I don't know what they've done. But, of course, as a conservative, I like to go in there and look at the books from front to back, top to bottom, in to out, and see what areas can be improved upon, what can be eliminated, what can be added cost effectively. You know, it does cost a lot of money to do autopsies. You got a forensic pathologist, but do the cases that are getting autopsies actually require an autopsy? I got to roll my sleeves and get in there and see what damage has been done over the last 8 years.
So one of the things that I hear you saying is that you would love to improve the interagency communication between your office and these other agencies.
Oh, sure. I mean, I'm not trying to, you know, step on anybody's toes. I just want to get the office more involved.
Right.
And because, you know, there's 900,000 people in this county, and there's people that need help. And I'd like to, you know, not just go in there and collect a check and sign off on death certificates. I'd like to get involved personally, not just the office, but me too.
And, you know, consistent with what Don just asked you, Anna Marie, what would be, again, day one? This is the first thing I would do on day one, other than, as you said, you looked at the documents, you looked at the operation plans, but what would be one of the first things that you would want to do as a top priority?
Well, again, you're looking for a specific thing, and I don't know what they're currently doing because I haven't worked there in 8 years, but I need to see what they're doing to see what direction would be the right direction to go into. I don't know what they've been doing for 8 years. I don't know how they're spending their money. You know, I don't have a good answer for that right now. Right. Ask me on the day after inauguration, and I'll have a better answer for you. You know, if I was still working there, or if it had only been a year or two, I could, you know, tell you what they're doing and what I would change. What, like I said, one of the things I would change is getting more involved and offering more services to the people, to the family members and friends. But as far as how the office is being run from a monetary stance, I got to go in there and look at everything and see what they're doing.
Right. Well, I guess what James is trying to get at, and maybe I can word it in a different way. In other words, when you get elected, you know, what do you want to bring to the office that says this is Anna Marie Scannapico's office and not the previous court? In other words, what air of culture are you going to bring? What are you going to try to do, whether it's intermixing?
I don't know if you remember, Don, but the last time I ran, the coroner, he barely showed up.
Yeah, well, that's right. You're right. So that, yeah, see, now I'm getting the one. He barely came in.
Be there.
I'm right.
Yeah, and from what I understand, he still only showed up, I think it's every Tuesday or every other Tuesday. So I would be more of a hands-on, I'm there almost every single day. And I would either be in the office or out in the community. I would be working for the people of Montgomery County, you know, both deceased and alive.
So
that's what I bring to the table, the fact that I would show up for this job.
Right. So, and just so the people that are listening understand, coroner is a paid position, and it would be nice if the person that is the coroner actually came to work.
Yeah. I mean, I would go a step further, and I would go to the scenes as well.
Right.
I wouldn't just be in the office. I would be at the scenes talking with the families, finding out what happened, giving, you know, comfort. I would be the hands-on coroner. Even when I worked there, it was a different coroner. But he wasn't hands-on either. He came to the office a little bit more often, but he wasn't a hands-on coroner. He wasn't trying to get the office involved in the community. So I have a lot of great ideas. I just need the people to come out and vote for me on Tuesday.
So to boil it down, and I think this is important for people to realize, you would lead by example.
Yes. You know, if I'm going to work there, if I'm going to be elected to that position, you know, I'm going to work with the pathologists. I'm going to work with the investigators. I'm going to work with the community. I'm going to work with the other agencies that Montgomery County already has. The main point of that sentence is I'm going to work. I'm going to work for the people of Montgomery County.
Okay, so Anna Marie, we're up against the time. So if people want to find out more about you, why don't you tell us where they can find out more about Anna Marie Scannapico running for coroner in Montgomery County.
I'm sorry, you faded out, but yes, I am. Anna Marie's going to be running for Montgomery County Coroner.
And where
and vote on Friday or Tuesday. I'm sorry. Tuesday.
Where can people go to find out more about you?
They're just to my Facebook page, Anna Marie Scannapico for Monco Coroner.
Okay, great. Well, thanks, Anna Marie, and hopefully, we'll be able to have a congratulatory show next week.
That would be so awesome.
Yes.
Republicans must show up, but I do appreciate you having me on. And let's have a nice red wave on Tuesday.
Sounds good. Okay.
Ooh, simplify there, Anna Marie. Go at it.
There you go.
Yep. Take care, Anna Marie. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking with Aaron Beshear, who is running for controller in the city of Philadelphia. Yeah, that's right, folks.
What's his name?
Aaron Beshear. We actually have a Republican running for office in Philadelphia.
My goodness, good Lord.
I don't know what to do.
Wow.
So we'll be right back after this short break. Have your rugs and floors taken a beating this winter? Fido's sharing the great outdoors with your sofa and chairs? Puppy still potty training? I have the solution to your problem. Give Fresh and Clean Cleaning Services a call at 215-949-0682. Fresh and Clean Cleaning Services, located in Levittown, Pennsylvania, can handle all your rug, floor, and furniture cleaning needs. Serving parts of Bucks and Montgomery counties, along with Northeast Philadelphia and parts of New Jersey, the owner, Rick, takes great pride in treating your home as his own. Fresh and Clean Cleaning Services provides services to both residential and business clients. So if it's time to remove those nasty spots, stains, and smells from your floors and furniture, give Rick at Fresh and Clean a call at 215-949-0682. You will be glad you did. And welcome back to the Conservative Voice here on WWDB 860 AM. I'm Don Bishop Jr. here with my good friend, Mr. James Jones.
Hoorah. Welcome, welcome.
If you want to call in, the toll-free call-in number is 888-329-3306.
Don, how about those clocks? How about those clocks coming Sunday?
They're just keep on ticking, James. But unfortunately, when we spring ahead, we got to fall back.
Got to fall back. I mean, we're coming up here Sunday. We got to fall back. It's like... Don't be mistaken. When Sunday rolls around, set that clock so that you're not late for church Sunday morning.
Yes,
okay.
So before we get going to Aaron, I do have to recognize a longtime listener and a friend of ours, a friend of the show. She unexpectedly passed away. Pauline Baracchio passed away earlier this week. Pauline was a... I don't know what to say. I'm almost at tears here. She was a great person. Her daughter Olivia has... done many things, you know, as far as with her photography, helping out the our Phyllis Schlafly events and other events that we've had. You know, Pauline has also called into this show many times. She called into my friend Dan Casaccio's show, the Don't Back Down show, many times. And I do want to recognize that not only have we lost a good person, but we've lost a true American patriot. And rest in peace, my good friend Pauline.
Oh, God bless. God bless her. So,
you know, so anyway, we've got in the studio my friend Aaron Beshear, who I met a few years ago. And Aaron's been one of the true patriots that he has never given up the fight. He ran for state representative, he ran for Congress, now he's running for coroner. And Aaron is not a career politician, he's a businessman, but he sees the depravity and the pit of hell that Philadelphia has become, you know, and he wants to do something about it. So he's running for controller. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Welcome, Aaron.
Thank you, Don. Thank you, James, for having me on the show. It is always an honor for me to be here. And again, my condolences for Pauline and her family. I have met with her at a few events, and she was a great woman.
Yes,
so may God bless her soul.
So, Aaron, you're running for controller, which, quite honestly, is probably one of the most important positions that the city of Philadelphia can possibly have. And the reason I say that is because money flows in Philadelphia. Money that's supposed to go to the constituents seems to go elsewhere. I'm not going to get into where it's going. We can figure that one out. But... First of all, tell the people what the controller does, and then tell us what you're going to do to safeguard the money of the hard-earned citizens of Philadelphia.
Don, thank you so much for the wonderful question. But if you allow me, I just wanted to talk about the situation of Philadelphia, and then I'll describe what, as a controller, I can contribute to make the things better. We are number one poorest big city in United States. We have doubled and tripled in poverty since 1945 to 19, 70s and then so on in these decades, that things are going worse and worse and worse. Okay, right now, if we look at the crimes, no one is safe in Philadelphia anymore. Here are the homicides, and I wanted to, because I'm an accountant, I'm a math person, so I like to present the numbers because numbers don't lie. Facts are stubborn. Okay, so in 2021, there were 562 homicides in this city. 2022, 516. And in 2023, there are 358 murders, homicides have been already committed in this city. And those people didn't die with the natural death. Someone shot them, someone killed them, or someone was trying to take their car, or it was just the gang shootings. But the precious lives have been lost in this city. All right, and it's not happening just in last 3 years, but it's been happening for years and years. Those were little statistics on the crimes, on the homicide sides. Let's look at the carjackings, okay? So before I tell you exactly what a controller can do and will do, so let me tell you what is the exact situation of this city. On the carjacking sides, in 2019, there were 224 cars that were jacked, okay? 2020, 409 cars. So in 2021, there were 866 cars. And in 2022, 1,331 cars were jacked. 2023, almost close to 7,000 cars were, jacked, according to National Insurance Crime Bureau. Those are the facts. So homicides are rising, okay? Carjackings are way beyond our imagination. And look at the drugs. If you just drive by in Kensington, it's filled with drugs. People are dying every single day on the streets. If you look at our schools are failing. A lot of kids who are graduating from the school, they are giving them the diplomas, and their literacy rate, according to a survey, their math is only up to 23%. And their reading level and comprehension level is up to only 43%. So you can imagine, and even some of the graduates, their comprehension and reading skill is only up to third and fifth grade level. So that means they are issuing the high school diplomas to those kids who do not really have the skills and the knowledge to go in the workforce and contribute for the well-being of the society. This is what's happening in Philadelphia. So now what does that mean? Now when you don't have the skills, that means you will not find the employment. And that means that will lead you to either become unemployed or you work on those entry-level jobs where you will always be on that poverty level where you cannot afford to pay your health insurance, okay, where you cannot to pay for your life insurance, where you cannot send your kids to good schools. And let's get back to the schools last and finally. The schools are a mess right now, okay, and no doubt about it. People can argue on back and forth, but look at the numbers. And these are some of the numbers. You can Google the numbers yourself if you don't trust me, all right? So this is what the worsening situation of this city is right now. Now, what does the city controller can do and will do about it if I get elected? It's simple. Common sense. This is who I am. Common sense guy, all right? Now, they are raising our taxes over and over. Just in the last 2-3 years, they have doubled and tripled the assessments of our properties. That means some of people will be paying, 2 times more taxes what they were paying 5 years ago. And some people's property taxes are raising up to 30-40%, all right? Now, there are a lot of taxes in Philadelphia, soda taxes. And if you're a businessman, then you pay business income receipt taxes. You pay net profit taxes. You pay wages and there's so on. There's 17 plus taxes if you just go to Philly's websites. So what I'm saying is, this city is number one in poverty, number one in crimes, okay, number one in homicides, carjackings, drugs, okay, and also, surprisingly, number one in raising your taxes, right? Now, they wanted to keep raising your taxes, but simple question is, where are the results? Why the things are not improving? Instead of getting our lives better, the quality of life is deteriorating in Philadelphia. That's why many people have left Philadelphia. They are moving to other counties. They are moving to suburbs, and they are even moving to other states. So that means more loss of revenue for the city government. But honestly, as an accountant who worked in the city government for 10 years as a financial accountant, okay, I do have the degree and experience, and I can tell you, one major problem with the mayor, with the council, they do not know how to use your tax dollars wisely. They are wasting your tax dollars because they are not producing the results. This is a simple cause and effect and logical conclusion. They are raising your taxes, but they are not producing the results that you desire. And what do you really desire? Like me, I wanted to be safe in Philadelphia. I wanted to make sure that no one is stealing my car. No one is going to steal my catalytic converter, okay? No one is going to just like, you know, shoot me in the street or my wife or my kids. And my kids are getting quality education, which is really not happening, you know? And what I'm simply saying, if you look at like as a common sense person from the common sense perspective, this city has been controlled by one party. And it is not the same party, same Democratic Party. Right now, this party that's controlling, it is controlled by the radical leftists. Okay, they are too far left. They are attacking gender. They are attacking marriage. They are attacking family. They want people to just be dependent on the government. They don't want people to be empowered, okay, because this is how their politics works. The more people are in poverty, the more people are like, you know, in desperation, they believe that they can sell that fear. They can sell that, you know, isms that they have, you know, to just, you know, keep winning the cities like Philadelphia.
Here's a question, Aaron, and I know you got a lot of good information to share, but I know our listeners want to hear some of these answers, too, because, you know, Philadelphia.
That's what it is.
Yeah, it is.
Philadelphia, right?
Philadelphia is a, you know, a sanctuary city. And so, therefore, we're getting the overflow from some of the border towns. Not probably as heavy as New York or Chicago or some of the other cities, but what part of the budget right now goes into a bucket that is dedicated to immigrations or illegal immigrants or folks who are coming into the city requiring emergency housing and shelter and things of that nature? And how would that be managed?
Well, absolutely. You know, the big chunk of our budget, you know, on the local level and even on the national level, especially with Biden administration's, you know, priorities, it is helping those illegal immigrants, you know, instead of helping the low-income families, the working families, okay, and instead of helping the veterans, right, they are suffering with, like, homelessness, okay, they are suffering with lack of health insurance. You know, there are so many issues. So instead of, like, you know, helping our people who have served this country, right, who live in this country, we are more sympathetic, like, you know, towards those people who just wanted to come into our country through illegal ways. And they are not women and children. I'm telling you, I'm also an immigrant. You know, a lot of them, at times, you will see these young men crossing, you know, our borders. Because they know that they can get away with it. They can come here. They can, like, you know, claim for asylum. I mean, how many of they are, like, you know, they belong to Hamas? How many of they, like, you know, belong to ISIS? There's no way to tell that. You know, for example, as an immigrant, I waited a couple of years for my turn to come here. My brother waited 8 years. My uncle waited more than 17 years to get into this country. He went through all the security clearance, and that's when we were able to come into this country. But right now, with the nonsense that this Biden administration have, anyone can just get into this country. And I'm predicting, I want to go on the record, what just happened in Israel, you know, it can happen here, and it will happen here if we don't stop right now, if we don't stop all this nonsense, you know, as a home. As a dad, I always lock my door because I wanted to protect my children, my wife. In the same way, this country is our home. We have to make sure that we let only those people come in that we can trust in. That means that they have to go through that security clearances. They have to go through that scrutiny because it is for not only my safety, it is for the safety and security of all of us, for our family, for our children. So let me get back to the local politics. Okay. The one thing that these radical far leftists who call them Democrats, but they are not really the Democrats because they are the leftists, okay? They are good at one thing, selling lies and selling deception. What they are saying always, just listen to them and just do the critical thinking. They want more and more money from the feds. They want more and more money from the state. You know, they wanted to raise your taxes. But guys, simple common sense question. Why are they not producing the results? Either they are incapable, all right, or they are doing deliberately this thing, or they are just so stupid. Those are the three options.
Let me ask you a question, Aaron, because I want to follow up on what James was asking and what you were just talking about with the illegal aliens coming into the country. From a strictly monetary standpoint, you know, I think we've covered the safety aspect of it and the security aspect. But from a strictly monetary standpoint, which is what the controller really focuses on, when you have this influx of illegal, non-revenue-producing people coming into the country, flooding our schools, flooding our social safety nets and so forth and so on, it puts a strain on the financial institution of our city and our state.
And the federal government.
Yes.
You know, so let's get back to the city issues right now. Okay. As a controller, of course, I cannot make the budget, but I can, you know, assess it. I can evaluate. I can audit. And I can expose the corruption. Okay. Mm-hmm. There are billions of dollars that are being invested in city. Okay. There are many nonprofits involved in this, business. But my question is simple. Where are the results? Okay. Our kids are dying every single day in the streets. All right. Our schools are failing. Kensington is filled with drugs. We are like number one in crimes, okay? So what's happening with our city? And the very same people, the very same party that keeps telling, okay, they are going to change the things, they were not able to change the things. They haven't, and they will not change the things because we are their base, okay? This is how they make money. This is what their base is, okay? This is how they win by, promoting the division among Americans, promoting the racism, promoting all kind of liberalism. But it's not about being white or black or Democrat or Republican. It is about the issues of people. It is about Americans. It is about working people, middle class, low income, all right? And it is about common sense. You know, people, at the end of the day, it's not about the party. It's about people wanted to be safe in Philadelphia, okay? People wanted to pay less taxes so they could go for life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. But obviously, this city is not doing that. The Democrats who are controlling this city, okay, and that I mean by these liberal Democrats, they are not good at that. They have failed, and they are going to continue to fail. As a controller, I will make them accountable. I will expose the corruption. I will make sure that people understand that, you know, what are they doing with their money? Because people are earning this money with their blood and sweat. And they're wasting all this money. They're not producing the results. So I'm going to go after every single department, after every single project, audit digitally, and rigorously and critically to make sure that they're producing the results so your life becomes better. So you are safe in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. You pay less taxes. That's what I will do as a city controller.
So you're going to be a Serpico.
I'm going to be a watchdog.
Here's the thing, because there's a significant amount of relative examples of fraud, waste, and abuse that have haunted
Absolutely.
City of Philadelphia for quite some time. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've got Papa Johnny Doc from the union. He's got a lot of legal issues that are trailing him like a bloodhound right now. And I know that there are more fraud, waste, and abuse that have taken place inside this city right now. Are you willing to work with the investigators, whether it comes from the district attorney's office, when you find that there's city employee that have abused equipment, funds, or inflated their reports, whatever is necessary. What are you willing to do to show that city comptroller's office are doing everything they can to protect the citizens who are spending hard-earned taxpayer dollars?
I will work with anybody, everybody, as long as it helps our city, as long as it helps Philadelphians, okay? I will sit down with anybody to have common sense communication. And right now, I wanted to make it clear, guys, if you elect a Democrat controller that you guys have been doing for a long time, okay, And this person, my opponent, has been in this office for 28 years. So now you need to ask yourself this question. Hey, do I need to elect the same person who was in this department and my life has become miserable? Or do I give a chance to a new person who is exposing all these things and who is not the part of the same team because I can expose the corruption?
Well, think about
it. You know what I mean? I do not belong to the same team.
Think about this, Aaron. So basically, you know, we talk about this many times. We use the analogy of the hen watching fox watching the hen house.
Yeah,
you know, in other words, if you're part of the organization that is in there and is part of the corruption, why are you going to expose it?
Because absolutely.
And so, if anything, the controller's office should be of the opposite party, whoever it happens to be. I mean, look, and I would say this quite honestly. If the Republicans were in charge, I'd feel better if my controller was a Democrat.
I agree.
You know, only because there needs to be an independent eyes
yes,
that is willing to talk about this stuff.
Well, my question to Aaron would be, how many investigations, how many charges that have been manifested itself in the last 15, 20 years from the comptroller's office where there were five fraud, waste, and abuse or, you know, malfeasance of some sort. What happened to those cases and how many of those, if you have that information?
I would say none to zero because it is the same team.
See, this is what Dunn just got through talking about.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to tell you. And I wanted to quote our previous controller, Rebecca Reinhardt. I was in one of the events, candidate events on United Indian PAC. And she admitted that her hands were tied. She couldn't go against mayor. She could go only up to a certain level. All right? And that should tell you the whole story. And I'm not saying she's a bad person. She's a fantastic woman, very qualified person. But what I'm saying is because it's one party, it's the same team. They are all Democrats. How are they going to go against each other? This is why Philadelphia needs to wake up and they need to elect a candidate from another party, especially for city controller's position. And I believe I'm the right man for this job.
So let me ask you this question, Aaron, because I'm going to, and this is an honest question. So obviously, if you were the controller and you found fraud, corruption, whatever the case may be, where they were padding the bills or somebody who had a slush fund or something like that, and you found that the Philadelphia DA's office turned a blind eye because they're a Democrat and the state attorney general turned a blind eye because he's a Democrat, would you be willing to bring the federal government involved and contact the U.S. Attorney's office as well?
I will do anything, everything in my power to change the things in Philadelphia. Because when I see people dying on the streets and billions of dollars are being invested in their names, but lives are still being lost due to crimes, carjackings, and drugs, as a Christian, I cannot take it anymore. I believe that, you know, it is my obligation, it is my ethical obligation, and as a Christian, you know, we are to spread the light in the darkness. So I will expose anybody, everybody who doesn't produce the results, who is not doing the job that they're supposed to do in this city to make the lives of Philadelphia's people better. And that's why people need to wake up and people need to, like, heed and pay attention. And I'm Aaron Bashir, and I'm not ashamed of my faith as a Christian. And I'm not saying that because just to win the election, because I firmly believe this country was founded on Judeo-Christian values. And, you know, there are people who don't want to talk about God, who don't want prayer and Bible in our school system, who don't want to, like, you know, honor what is right, what is just, and what is really human in our country. There are people who wanted to, like, force all these abominations, homosexuality. Okay, they wanted to force this child abuse, like, you know, because that's what I call it when they are portraying all those sexual, like, you know, materials in our textbooks for our kids. They are advocates for devil. Okay, they are pushing for these abominations. They are destroying the marriage. They are destroying the family. They are destroying our faith. Okay, this is why, as a Christian, I cannot sit silent and I'll do anything, everything in my power. And especially in this age and technology, I will use any resources. I will expose them on the media, through the radio shows, through the social media, through the newsletters. But I want them to fix the city. I'm not going to take it anymore, and I'm standing for my city.
Well, you know, that's good because I can tell you, so when Senator Mastriano was running for governor and he went down to Kensington, And he actually spoke to a few grandmothers there in the park, and they said that they were tired of the same old.
Oh, yeah.
And they were willing to vote against the Democrats just because they've been getting the same results. And we talked about it on the 2 o'clock show when Randall comes in, and he speaks about it a lot, that the Democrats are great for showing up and you're off in your neighborhood for election year. Oh, and yeah. Then you don't see them again for another 4 years. Right. So we only got about a minute left, so I just want to get this point in there. So, Aaron, tell people where they can find out about you, where they can find out about your race, and where they can – and I know you have an event coming up on Sunday, so let's get that in there as well.
I just want to say, ladies and gentlemen, my friends, listen, you got a choice here. I'm Aaron Bashir. My button is 223. All right, and I'm running for city controller. I believe I can make your life better by exposing the corruption, and I can make them accountable. So please vote for me, spread the word, and please spread the word. It is really, really safety and security of our city. So you have to tell your friends, please talk about me on the social media, call your friends, your family, but this is the time we take the city back. And also on this Sunday evening at 7 p.m. at 2481 Rohat Market, we are doing a fundraiser. If you can if you can stop by, please feel free to do that. It's only $20. And again, we are not about money. We are about people. And as a Christian, I believe that we need to play our role. And that's what I'm doing in the city. And I'm looking for your support and vote, regardless of if you are Democrat or Republican or independent. Just use the common sense and vote for me. I'm Aaron Bashir, button number 223.
Hey, thank you very much. We're going to take a short break. And then when we come back, we're going to be speaking to Representative Tom Jones and Bucks County businessman Jim Worthington. You're listening to The Conservative Voice here on WWDB 860 AM.
All the red, white, and blue.